This Morning, America's First News, starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
The summit is down, but not out. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. It is Friday, May 25th. Glad you're with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
President Trump has canceled a summit with North Korea's leader over its hostile rhetoric, but later in the day, Pyongyang offered a more conciliatory tone.
Terror in Canada. More than a dozen people have been injured after police say two men detonated a bomb at a restaurant 20 miles outside Toronto.
Disgraced Hollywood producer Harvey Weinstein is expected to surrender today to authorities in New York for sex crimes.
And the disconnect between the immigration debate and economic realities.
It seems like a time in which U.S. economy is humming along and is actually in need of additional immigrant labor.
Wall Street Journal executive Washington editor Jerry Seib on legal immigration. President Trump has canceled plans for a summit next month with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. He pointed to open hostility from the North Korean regime as the reason for yesterday's decision, and the White House is now considering dozens of sanctions.
If and when Kim Jong-un chooses to engage in constructive dialogue and actions, I am waiting.
Hours later, North Korea struck a more conciliatory tone, saying Pyongyang is willing to sit down face-to-face to resolve issues anytime and in any format. The statement came from Kim Kye-gwan, a senior North Korea foreign ministry official who set a darker tone last week through harsh words against National Security Advisor John Bolton. Mr. Trump says canceling the summit was a missed opportunity, but held open the possibility that it could take place later.
I really believe Kim Jong-un wants to do what's right, so hopefully things will work out.
The president said U.S. military forces were ready if necessary. Let's get analysis now from Matt Makowiak, GOP consultant and host of a podcast called Mac on Politics. Matt, how do you see it?
As Donald Trump knows better than anyone, in order to get a good deal, you have to be able to walk away from the table. He'd be willing to walk away from the table, and that's certainly what President Trump did here. Look, this North Korean negotiation, I think, had been deteriorating for several weeks. There were some initial signs that were positive early on, releasing the hostages, beginning diplomatic relationships with South Korea again, the visit at the DMZ. All those things were positive. But in the last couple of weeks, as they've been finalizing details for the summit on June 12th, it was pretty clear that that they were just not going to be able to sort of agree to the terms of the negotiation. And honestly, I think you really have to put the 90 or 95% of the blame on the North Koreans. After telling the South Koreans they were willing to denuclearize, they then said they weren't willing to denuclearize. They objected to long scheduled defensive joint military training operations between the United States and South Korea. It seems the sides are just too far apart. And so at this point, I think President Trump made the right decision to withdraw from this, not to give North Korea the propaganda victory of being able to meet with an American president. Now, they're blaming statements made by National Security Advisor John Bolton comparing the North Korean situation to Libya. That's obviously a comparison that would give any dictator some concern, given that Gaddafi died several years after denuclearizing. But this also, I think, puts on ice the potential for a significant foreign policy victory for this Trump White House. And so, look, this is a disappointing day for the White House. There's no question about it. I also think this decision was probably inevitable for the White House. And so rather than rush into a bilateral meeting that's unlikely to yield a positive result, withdrawing several weeks before it happens was the better option. Neither option was a good option, but it was a better option.
All right. Do you think in any way that North Korea deliberately sabotaged the summit here by the comments in the past day or so?
It certainly looks that way. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about what the United States has said has to be part of this deal. Full, irreversible, verifiable denuclearization. And once that happens, economic assistance can flow to North Korea from the United States, both in the lifting of sanctions initially and perhaps even through direct foreign aid. That's a deal that's been on the table for some time. You obviously have had the CIA director and now Secretary of State meet twice with the North Koreans just in the past 3 months. Mike Pompeo has been over there twice. So I don't think there's a lot of doubt about what the United States was requiring. What is one of the really interesting subplots here is to what extent was China involved in all of this? It's possible China may have scuttled this over frustration with the Trump administration over trade, tariffs and other related issues. China has tremendous economic leverage over North Korea. 90% of North Korea's energy comes from China. They have just huge reliance on their economy. And so this is something the president referenced just in the last couple of days, that he believes that perhaps China has influenced North Korea in terms of changing the direction they were going. That's what's so puzzling here, is this thing was on a positive trajectory for several weeks, and then it changed. Now, to me, blaming John Bolton mentioning Libya is not a real reason. That's pretty silly, I think. I don't think that is that significant. So, we'll see. Can they put this all back together again? Can they restart initial talks again? Maybe they need to let some time pass. I think the risk now is, will North Korea go back to testing ballistic missiles? Will they go back to other aggressive steps? Will they go back to aggressive rhetoric? These are all open questions now, and they're concerns not just for the United States, not just for North Korea and its regional neighbors, Japan, South Korea, China, but there's concern around the world, particularly in the Western United States and the Pacific.
Thanks, Matt. Matt Makowiak, GOP consultant. His podcast is called Mac on Politics. More than a dozen people have been wounded after two unidentified men walked into an Indian restaurant on the outskirts of Toronto and set off a bomb. It happened last night in the city of Mississauga, about 20 miles west of Toronto. The blast went off in the Bombay Bell restaurant at about 10:30 local time. Deputy Chief of Paramedics Brian Gibson.
We transported 15 patients from the scene to local area hospitals. Three of those patients went down to a trauma center in Toronto.
Authorities say the two male suspects fled after detonating their improvised explosive device. No one has claimed responsibility, and the motive for the attack was not known. Police posted a photograph on Twitter showing two people with dark zip-up hoodies walking into the establishment. One appeared to be carrying an object. The attack in Mississauga, by the way, comes a month after a driver plowed a rented van into a lunch hour crowd in Toronto, killing 10 people and injuring 15 others. 13 minutes now after the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. Glad you could spend some time with us on this Friday. A man once considered among the most skilled executives in Hollywood is expected to turn himself into authorities today in connection with a sex crimes investigation. More from This Morning's Mike Gavin.
The Wall Street Journal says veteran Hollywood producer Harvey Weinstein is expected to face charges in connection with Lucia Evans, who has alleged that Mr. Weinstein forced her to perform a sex act on him 14 years ago when she was an aspiring actress. The Journal says under New York state law, some of the most serious sex offenses, such as rape, don't have statutes of limitations. Dozens of women have come forward with accusations. It's not clear what charges Mr. Weinstein faces. A lawyer for Mr. Weinstein did not offer comment yesterday. Gordon.
Thank you, Mike. The investigation into Mr. Weinstein has been marked by tensions between the office of the Manhattan District Attorney, Cyrus Vance, and New York police, which criticized Mr. Vance's decision not to charge Mr. Weinstein in 2015 for a sexual assault allegation brought by an Italian model. This portion of the program is brought to you by LifeLock. It's a fact. Our devices are vulnerable to cyber criminals. If you're concerned your devices have been hacked, look for these signs. Does your device restart on its own? Is it running slower than normal? Are any programs running that you don't recognize? Are there posts on your social media that you did not create? Hackers are sneaky, so stay vigilant. There are so many threats in today's connected world, and it takes just one weak link for criminals to get in. Good thing new LifeLock Identity Theft Protection adds the power of Norton Security to help protect against threats to your identity and your devices that you can't easily see or fix on your own. I use LifeLock, helps me sleep better at night knowing my devices are protected and my identity as well. If you have a problem, LifeLock has agents who will work to fix it. Now, no one can stop every cyber threat or prevent all identity theft or monitor transactions at all businesses, but new LifeLock with Norton Security is able to uncover threats you might otherwise miss. Go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use the promo code Gordon for an additional 10% off your first year. Again, 10% off at LifeLock.com and the promo code Gordon. That's LifeLock.com with the promo code Gordon. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koschenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, North Korea says it's still willing to sit for talks with the U.S. at any time in any format. A restrained response from a nation noted for its belligerence to President Trump's abrupt cancellation of a summit with the North's leader. Trump says he thinks things could still work out.
It's possible that the existing summit could take place or a summit at some later date. Nobody should be anxious. We have to get it right.
Trump's decision came as a shock to South Korean officials, who only days ago were publicly predicting a 99.9% chance the meeting would proceed as scheduled. An explosion caused by an improvised explosive device ripped through an Indian restaurant in a mall in the Toronto suburb of Mississauga, wounding 15 people. Peel Police Constable Irina Yashnik says several people were seriously hurt.
The three were transported to a Toronto trauma center with critical injuries.
Two suspects with their faces covered entered the restaurant and dropped some sort of IED device and fled. Authorities do not know of a motive. Roger Stone, a longtime confidant and former campaign advisor to Donald Trump, sought information from WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange about Hillary Clinton, according to emails viewed by the Wall Street Journal. Stone reached out to a radio personality who had interviewed Assange in an email on September 18, 2016, and asked him to contact the WikiLeaks founder. Stone wanted emails from WikiLeaks about Clinton's role in a supposed Libyan peace deal in 2011 when she was Secretary of State. President Trump signed a posthumous pardon for boxer Jack Johnson, the first black heavyweight world champion. Johnson was convicted in 1913 of violating the Mann Act, a law that largely barred transporting women and girls across state lines for sex, and served 10 months in federal prison. He had traveled with a white woman across state lines and was convicted by an all-white jury. Actor Sylvester Stallone, who played a boxer in Rocky, who attended yesterday's signing, says this was overdue.
His prime was taken away, but somehow he still managed to persevere and kept a smile on his face, and he's truly an inspirational character.
Boxing champions Lennox Lewis and Deontay Wilder were also on hand in the Oval Office.
Not that very good. Thank you, Jen. It's 22 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. The wildly popular video game Fortnite is free to play, but serious players often end up spending money on cosmetic upgrades for their characters, including backpacks and different skins, as they're called. You can also buy a battle pass, which gives players access to particular challenges. And when you win a challenge, you gain access to new cosmetic items. It's easy to spend a lot of money and not even realize it. More from Maria LaMagna, personal finance reporter at MarketWatch. Maria set this up.
So this is a super popular game that, you know, you've probably heard people talking about. It's called Fortnite, and it's, sort of a shooting game that has become incredibly popular, not only to play, but also to watch. Now there's a whole industry based on, you know, people watching these professional gamers play, and Fortnite is super hot right now, for both of those reasons.
Mm. As you point out in the story, Fortnite is raking in the cash. How so?
Yes. So it's free to play. It's, you know, you don't have to pay to actually download it. But once you're playing the game, you can actually buy purchases within the app. So that's for things like you can make sort of cosmetic changes to your player. You can unlock challenges where you can, change sort of the look and feel of the game. So because of that, you make these sort of micro payments of just a few dollars here and there, and it's really adding up for the company. The game just debuted in late 2017, and it made $233 million just in the month of March. So jeez, it's really crazy how much the company is making when people are making these really small payments that are just really adding up.
Well, you talked to one young man, I believe he was sort of, I don't know if he was joking or not, but he said, I'm addicted to gambling and I like this game. I mean, how does he try to manage that?
Yeah, exactly. So the guy I talked to in person, actually, he said he doesn't have a gambling addiction. There was someone on Reddit kind of talking about that, they feel like it feeds their sort of addiction, which is kind of scary. I talked to an 18-year-old, and he said he spent, about $150 to $200 playing Fortnite, and he feels like that's not a lot because he's spending so much time doing it. So if it's a hobby that he loves, that's really not that much. But he did say, there is sort of a feeling of like, if you want to be really good at the game, you want your player to look really good, and you start to have these incentives to kind of keep spending. So it's partially like it's almost like keeping up with the Joneses virtually. It's sort of like, you want to look good compared to your fellow players.
Wow. We're speaking with MarketWatch personal finance reporter Maria Lamagna. She's written a piece about video games. It's entitled "Why It's So Easy to Dig Yourself into a Financial Hole with Games Like Fortnite." You said too that these games can be like casinos. How come?
Yes. So I did talk to some experts who are saying, when you are sort of reloading virtual money, whether that's on a restaurant app like Starbucks or Dunkin' Donuts, or you're doing a game where you're, sort of working in coins or some kind of virtual currency, there starts to be sort of a disconnect between actually spending real money and spending this virtual money, which is really the same mentality that casinos use. You're not putting up a dollar every time, you're getting these chips. So it's really a similar mentality of you're just playing a game, this money's not real. But then, of course, you get the bill at the end of the month and realize, oh my gosh, I was spending real money and it really added up.
Thanks, Maria. MarketWatch personal finance reporter Maria Lamagna. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. You don't often find the words business and friendly in the same sentence, let alone the same state. Unless, of course, you're talking about Michigan. Michigan's business-friendly practices help them become a leader in industries that range from agriculture and cybersecurity to aerospace and advanced manufacturing. In fact, Michigan is ranked among the top 10 states for major new and expanded facilities, which makes Michigan more than business-friendly. It makes Michigan business smart. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org.
At Dell, we know running a small business takes hard work. As a thank you, for all of Small Business Month, we're offering up to 40% off select PCs with 8th Gen Intel Core processors and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call 877-BUY-DELL to speak with a small business technology advisor today. That's 877-BUY-DELL. Special financing available to qualified business customers when using Dell Business Credit. Go to dell.com/dbcpromos for details.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show, like us on Facebook, or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Thanks for spending time with us on this Friday, May 25. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. Summit with North Korea canceled, but a future one is not ruled out. Bomb at a restaurant in Canada injures more than a dozen people. Former Hollywood exec Harvey Weinstein expected to turn himself in to face sex crime charges. A jury in Georgia rules a security company must pay a woman who survived a rape $1 billion for the action of one of its guards. 43-year-old Stacey Cunningham today becomes the first woman to head the New York Stock Exchange in its 226-year history. And the latest Star Wars movie hits theaters today. There is a good case that America's economy, growing and thriving, has never needed immigrant labor more than it does now. Unemployment has fallen to 3.9%, its lowest point in more than 17 years, and by one measure, more than a third of small businesses have job openings they cannot fill. But there's a disconnect with the immigration debate. So says Wall Street Journal Executive Washington Editor Jerry Seib. Jerry, explain.
Well, there's a pretty obvious and discernible anti-immigration mood in the country, not just anti-illegal immigration, which I think everybody can kind of agree needs to be brought under control, but even anti-legal immigration. There's a bill that conservatives in the House want to see debated and voted upon that would not only crack down on illegal immigration at the border, but would actually reduce legal immigration into the country by 25%, the bill's authors say. Some people say it'd be more like 40%. So it'd be a pretty substantial cut back in not just illegal immigration, but legal immigration. And what's odd about this is it's happening at a time when all kinds of businesses are saying they actually need more workers. They need immigrant labor. You have Alaska fisheries, restaurants in New England, crab processors in Maryland, farmers all across the Midwest and the West saying they need thousands of additional workers. There aren't enough Americans to fill these jobs. The unemployment rate is down to 3.9%, the lowest rate in 17 years, and there are officially 6.6 million job openings in the U.S. And so it seems like a time in which the U.S. economy is humming along and is actually in need of additional labor, including immigrant labor, but the move politically is in the opposite direction, and that's why the immigration debate seems detached from current economic reality in some ways.
Mm. Why such a disconnect?
Well, I think that's because, first of all, I think that people have kind of gotten illegal immigration and legal immigration kind of mangled up.
Yeah.
And most people agree that not having control of your borders and not having control of immigration is not a good thing and that needs to be brought under control. But that's kind of been confused with cutbacks on legal immigration and it's all been also kind of intertwined with the debate over the Dreamers. Young people who came as children or infants illegally with their families, but now have been in the mainstream, and there's 600,000 or 700,000 of them. Most people think they ought to have some legal status, but that's been held up. And there's kind of an overall feeling of anxiety about immigration in general. And I think part of this is economic, because people think that immigrants take jobs and suppress wages, even though I think there's a lot of economic research that suggests that's not entirely true. But I also think a lot of this debate has become cultural.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal executive Washington editor Jerry Seib. He's written a piece entitled "An Immigration Debate Distinct from Economic Realities." I think you pointed out, too, did you say in like 30 years there'll be more people who are over the age of 65 than under the age of 18?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, so that's the other factor that's at play here, is at the same time you have a growing economy creating a need for more workers, you have a steadily and actually decidedly declining birth rate among Native Americans. I mean, the federal government reported just last week that the number of babies born in the U.S. last year is hitting a 30-year low. And so as a consequence, there are fewer Native-born Americans being produced, if you will, to start filling out the workplace. And meanwhile, the number of baby boomers who are living to be older is growing. And so at some point in the next few decades, you'll have a kind of historic crossing of the lines. The number of people under 18 in this country, which is a number that has always been bigger than the number of senior citizens, will be surpassed by the number of Americans who are 65 years and older. So you have both a shrinking Native American workforce and an aging Native American workforce. And again, that is, in many economists' minds, an argument for immigration. The other thing I should say is that one of the things that's been caught up in this debate about whether immigration is good or bad is the programs that provide temporary help for employers, don't give immigrants permanent status in any way, but provide temporary visas, are also under strain, and that's also, I think, been kind of caught up in this broader argument. There's something called an H-2B visa program that specifically provides low-skilled foreign workers for temporary jobs in the U.S., restaurant help, agricultural help, those kinds of things. That program is oversubscribed. There are businesses that want thousands more of those visas than the government is making available. And that's another subject of debate right now as well.
Thanks, Jerry. It's Wall Street Journal executive Washington editor Jerry Seib. Meanwhile, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says there will not be a fresh Senate vote on immigration legislation if the House passes a measure, saying he has no desire to spend time on bills that are bound to fail. In an intensifying fight in the House, centrist Republicans are attempting to force a vote on a series of immigration measures. It is 19 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Friday. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, the owner of a gym in Alabama isn't backing down from a sign advertising his business that has stirred up a bit of controversy. Scott Campbell, the owner of Pell City Fitness, has come under fire for a sign that was erected in Pell City on May 15th, with officials telling him, according to the Washington Post, he has to take it down or risk a fine. The billboard reads, "Tired of being fat and ugly? Just be ugly." Implying that joining the gym will help change at least one thing that you don't like about yourself. Instead of taking down the sign, Campbell posted a video on his Facebook page in front of the sign to gather support, saying that he's working with the city manager to resolve the issue and explained that he wasn't trying to offend anyone.
"I'm not mean-spirited at all. The sign is a playful jab. It's supposed to be an attention grabber. And I love people. I care about people. And you know what? I don't care if you're ugly or not. You know what? I can help you get in shape." And that's kind of the attitude of the sign.
He goes on to explain that he once weighed 300 pounds as an Alabama state trooper before an incident with a suspect pushed him to lose weight. And he's hoping to push others to follow in his footsteps.
I suspect that suspect got away.
Yeah.
Running away from a fat state trooper.
Right. Yeah. I'm guessing. So now, just to be clear, the issue apparently wasn't the content of the sign as far as the city was concerned. It was that he didn't have a permit to put it up because it was a sign. He just put it up right outside of his business.
Gotcha.
You know, so he didn't have a permit to put it up. So supposedly they're working on that and they're going to get it fixed. But there are some people who were offended by it. But then you start to think to yourself, the people who are complaining that they were offended by it, are they sort of admitting that they're that they're ugly?
Got called out.
Right. Yeah. Like, if you're offended by it, are you admitting that you're ugly, that you think you're ugly? So it's kind of a catch-22 there, I guess.
It reminds me of a story I think that's attributed to Winston Churchill, where his wife accuses him of being drunk.
Yeah.
And he says, "That is true, but you are ugly, and tomorrow I will be sober." I think that's how the story goes.
One of his greatest quotes, I'm sure. And if you've ever tangled with meddlesome weeds in your yards, you know how difficult it can be to eradicate them, with homeowners sometimes going to extreme measures to craft a perfectly manicured lawn, no matter how pesky they become. However, setting the weeds on fire probably is not the best idea. That's what one man in Ohio apparently did, and while he might have taken care of his weed problem, he created a much larger problem. He burned down his garage. Local news reports that Springfield Township firefighters in central Ohio were called to a home around 4 a.m. yesterday for a detached garage engulfed in flames. Fire officials learned the man had been trying to eliminate the weeds around the garage, accidentally setting his garage ablaze, not only taking down the building, but all of the contents, including all of his tools and some appliances. Fire officials estimate the loss of between $10,000 and $15,000. Thankfully, nobody was injured.
Say the A word.
The A word.
Alcohol.
Well, it was 4 a.m., wasn't it?
4 a.m. fighting weeds.
Who else is taking down weeds at 4 a.m.?
Right. Honey, I'm going to go outside and just take care of some weeds right now.
Yes.
13 minutes in front of the hour. Thanks for being with us. Hang on to your wallet. If you're getting away in the family car for the Memorial Day weekend, expect to face some of the highest prices at the pump in years. As of yesterday, the average price for a gallon of gas across the country clocked in at $2.96, according to AAA. That's the priciest gas has been in the buildup to Memorial Day weekend since 2014. Gas prices have so far jumped nearly 25% from where they sat a year ago, when the average national price per gallon was $2.37. Oil prices dropped off considerably in late 2014 and throughout much of 2015, before bottoming out during the first few weeks of 2016. Since then, prices have maintained a slow and steady climb. AAA says paying at least $3 per gallon to fill up a tank could be the norm throughout much of the U.S. It is 8 minutes now in front of the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koschenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, President Trump's decision to cancel next month's summit with North Korea's Kim Jong-un came as a shock to South Korean officials, who only days ago were publicly predicting a 99.9% chance the meeting would proceed as scheduled. Already on shaky ground amid stalled talks with North Korea, South Korea's ability to fulfill its role of mediator between Pyongyang and Washington suffered the biggest blow yet, when Trump apparently failed to give his allies in Seoul a heads up about his announcement. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo.
"I hope we quickly are able to get back to that place, but ultimately Chairman Kim will have that decision to make for himself. As the president said, we welcome their call, their outreach to head back down that path.
The setback follows months of diplomatic progress that led to a historic summit between Kim and South Korean President Moon Jae-in in April. Republican and Democratic lawmakers have gotten classified briefings about the origins of the FBI investigation into Russia's meddling in the 2016 presidential election, a highly unusual series of meetings prompted by partisan allegations that the Bureau spied on Donald Trump's campaign. Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff says he learned nothing new.
Nothing we heard today has changed our view that there is no evidence to support any allegation that the FBI or any intelligence agency placed a spy in the Trump campaign.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell told Fox News he had learned nothing particularly surprising, but declined to go into detail. Harvey Weinstein is expected to turn himself into police this morning to face charges involving an aspiring actress who said he forced her to perform oral sex on him. It would be the first criminal case against Weinstein to come out of the barrage of sexual abuse allegations from scores of women that destroyed his career and set off a national reckoning that brought down other powerful men in what has become known as the Me Too movement. Following the Easter success of Jesus Christ Superstar, NBC is doubling down on rock musicals broadcast in front of a live audience. The network has announced that Hair, the 1960s counterculture sensation, will be its next live musical. Hair is set to be broadcast next spring.
How about that? All right, very good. Thank you, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. The coin commemorating the now-canceled meeting between President Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un is on sale. In fact, demand is so high for it that USA Today says it crashed the website of a White House gift shop. The commemorative coin, which features the names and silhouettes of Mr. Trump and Mr. Kim, the names of their respective countries, and the phrase peace talks, was first revealed Monday. They weren't available to the general public, as about 250 were minted. 4 days later, the meeting was canceled, but don't fear if you still want your own copy. A third-party White House gift shop is still selling a version of the coins, and it's now at a lower price. The replicas come in a black velvet case and also include South Korean President Moon Jae-in. The coins, originally marked at $24.95, were lowered to just under $20 as the deal of the day on the website. Shortly after Mr. Trump announced the Singapore meeting for next month had been called off, the gift shop website crashed. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Great news! There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.